From Centered, welcome to the Take Root podcast, where our purpose is to share testimonies that encourage you to deepen your roots of faith. Join host Karen Johnson to hear stories of those who have experienced God directing their own lives to a deeper, engaged faith.
Well, hello, friends. You know, I just really love that I get to share this journey with you of listening to the stories of so many different people who are agents of God's love in the world. And today, I get to introduce you to a woman who has followed the heart of God for many years in a faithful and joyous walk, one day at a time. Sally Leist is a Pacific Northwest native who graduated from the University of Washington. She's worked in the business world in LA and then with Young Life International and World Vision. And then as she raised her children, she continued to pour into Young Life and other organizations as a volunteer for over 25 years. 3 years ago, she and her husband Scott moved to Kampala, Uganda. Scott is the East Africa Director for Pepperdine University's Global Justice Institute, and Sally works right alongside him. Through this work, Uganda, Rwanda, and now Ethiopia are starting to implement plea bargaining and public defense to help alleviate significant overcrowding in their prisons. Sally and Scott really live the life of seek justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with their God. In addition to working with Scott in Africa, with U.S. lawyers, African lawyers, and law students, Sally serves as the Ugandan Regional Team Coordinator for Young Life. She is so encouraged by the explosive growth of Young Life across the African continent, and her joy in this is contagious. Sally and Scott have been married for 29 years, and they have two adult daughters, and they travel between work in Uganda and Issaquah, Washington, which they still consider to be home. So welcome, Sally. Thanks for being here.
Oh, it's a joy, Karen, to be with you. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, so fun. Sally and I have known each other for, 40 years?
A million years.
A million. There we go. A million years. I love that. And we are that old.
Yeah, it feels like that. And I got my glasses on to prove it.
That's awesome. Well, listen, just start by telling us a little bit about you, Sally, and your family and who you are.
Yeah, it's such a joy to be here with you. And we've been in the Pacific Northwest for years and years and years. I certainly call it home. My family, my folks are there, and Scott's folks are there as well. Scott and I met at Young Life Camp up in Canada, probably 29 years. I met 4 years prior to that. Mm-hmm. We were both volunteering with Young Life at the time. And we've stayed in the area. A number of years ago, we lived in Kenya for a year with our daughters. Scott was with International Justice Mission. Our kids were little. Yeah. We would say we have two girls, and we would say that time away with them when they were 7 and 10, to be overseas, to be in a different culture. They went to a British international school. It really was kind of a demarcation point for our family. We always say it's BK and AK, before Kenya and after Kenya.
Oh, I love that.
So very developmental for us in our marriage.
Yeah.
Wasn't easy. It was a really tough year, but it was really great with our girls. So we are Pacific Northwest people, and but we're not there right now. We're in Uganda right now.
Yeah. But that shows you've had this heart, both of you, for a long time. For justice, not only here. I mean, Scott has his law practice here still in Issaquah and does that via Zoom. But this heart for other places in the world to bring justice where there really isn't much has been on your hearts for a long time.
Yeah. And it's really interesting. Certainly the justice piece with my husband's profession. He was a police officer for 8 years in Seattle.
Right.
He worked
right.
as a prosecutor. So he personally has had a heart for justice. Without going into too many details, there are some family issues that have kind of led him to care for people that are incarcerated. And so it's very for him, especially, but for us as a couple. But I really think the bigger picture beyond just the justice issue, and we've continue to try and pour this into our daughters who are both in their 20s is just serving, volunteering, and giving our lives away. And we said that we met through being volunteers with Young Life, a youth ministry, all of our friends, we have that met through Young Life for people that have also served. And so it's been a joy to be continually in the lives of people who are giving their lives away. And it's really cemented. And frankly, I was professional. I think I was working for World Vision when you and I met, Karen. Mm-hmm, You were working, but you were also giving your life away. And so I think that's what we really want our kids to hear, because I think volunteering is less of a thing now with the younger generation, especially the COVID. It made people, they were working or in their room studying or whatever, but we just really feel like giving our lives away. And at this point, it's a justice issue, certainly.
Yeah. That's so true. Yes. So that has come a lot out of your deep faith. And where did that come from? What was your faith journey like for you?
Well, I actually have to attribute it to my mother. My mother my parents are both still living. But my mom was a Young Life kid in the early 50s.
Oh my gosh.
Involved with Young Life in Tacoma. She was a Young Life camper at Malibu, the Young Life camp in Canada, the first year, not the first week, but the first summer.
I was going to say that must have been that very first summer. For people who don't know, Malibu is not the Malibu in California. This is a Canadian Young Life camp up in the Jarvis Inlet, Princess Louisa Inlet, and one of the most spectacular, beautiful places in the world.
Yes. And adults can go now too. You don't just have to be a kid. Adults can go because they have men's and women's weekends. And it's really, but my mom had gone to camper when I was in high school down in the Portland area. We did not have Young Life. I was a church going kid, not really very interested, kind of hoping every sleep in. And so I just really wasn't excited about it. But my mom knew that Young Life would be helpful, and she helped get Young Life going our high school. And it came to my faith in Jesus at my first Young Life camp, my first sophomore year in high school. And it's been not looking back. And my husband has similar. He had met the Lord through Young Life when he was in high school over in Silverdale, Central Kitsap area. So we both have those early journey days, and I'm really continue to be grateful for my mom for planting
seeds. That is so cool. I mean, that's my story too. I met the Lord through Young Life, and I didn't understand who he was until then. Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about Young Life Africa and what you've learned through that. I have just loved reading some of your stories about the explosive thing that's going on there, which is so exciting. Tell us about that.
Well, Young Life is it's expanded internationally all over the world. But I think right now in Africa, I think Young Life is in like 28, 29 countries. I looked it up actually before we chatted today. I think there's 345 full-time Young Life staff, and there's like 25,000 volunteer Young Life leaders. And this is not suburban Africa. This is in all different kinds of communities. And the commitment to volunteering in communities is powerful. And I have had the honor of meeting a number of staff. There's about 45 staff in Uganda, and there are three regional staff people. The exciting thing, I think, about what's happening with Young Life in Africa too, is Young Life International. Just about a year ago, Young Life International made a decision for the first time in the history of Young Life, which started in the United States, that they were going to hire nationals to be senior vice presidents. And they made three African men senior vice presidents for Young Life. African nationals are running the ministry completely here.
That's so awesome.
It's beautiful. And I'll tell you, the music the enthusiasm, the purity of the ministry is really lovely. We had the privilege of, visited a Young Life staff guy that lives in the central or in the Kampala, which is the capital of Uganda, kind of about 40 miles from me on the other side of town, and what many would consider to be a slum, little room. He and his wife, and they have a little boy. He is on staff. It's paid very, very little, but he works all the time. It was an honor to be in his little sitting room, but the impact he's making in his community. We saw the little Young Life club room, which is where they meet, and it's a tiny little dirt room with a dirt floor, probably, I don't know, 15 feet by 10 feet, and they cram a bunch of people in there. And he was so delighted they were able to rent it for $10 a month. So the power of what's happening in the community, in these communities all over, and the stories of changed lives. He was actually, his name is Andrew, and a couple of buddies came to Young Life Camp because there were cute girls. They heard that, which is the same dates. But they were notorious. Thieves were stealing cell phones, and the police knew about them. And all three of them came to faith through Young Life and have changed lives. They're all married. They're all working full time for Young Life in the community from which they grew up in. So it's just a very pure, beautiful, transformative ministry where people are giving very selflessly to serve.
And kids are coming like crazy, right? I mean, the growth in the United States, the growth has honestly not been great since COVID. And in Africa, it's just exploding though, right?
Well, and I think that the difference is that people that here, they have a need and they recognize their need. It's how do you tell someone who thinks they have everything that they don't, which is, you know, suburban Young Life kids, which is what I was. Here, the need is great. Single moms, like in Uganda, about 20% of 14-year-olds during COVID became pregnant.
Oh my gosh. Say that number again.
20% of 14-year-olds. And so the average age here is 16, and the average woman has 6 kids in her lifetime. So the number of kids, there's joblessness, schools, a lot of family, those 14-year-olds, a lot of them never went back to school after COVID. Uganda schools were shut down for 2 years. So the difficulty of going back. So just a huge gap in opportunity, economic opportunity. There's jobs are very, very scarce, and poverty is quite significant. So people have need, and they recognize their need, not just food and shelter, but something more. And I think there's an openness to a spiritual hunger that that they're desperate for.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Well, and that's this is the kind of thing that you just mentioned, 3 young men that came out of a life of crime.
Right.
Into a whole different life. And now they're married and they're passing on this gift. And you think that's the kind of thing that's going to change countries and even a whole continent.
Yes.
You know, it's when you can make those bring that kind of love and change into kids' lives by knowing that there's a God who loves them. That's so beautiful.
Well, and the lovely thing about visiting Andrew, we had a taxi driver take us, and he grew up a Muslim and didn't kind of Muslim in culture, not a real faith. And he sat in this time with Andrew to hear a story, and he walked away and he said that his mind was absolutely captivated. He's continued to pursue some of those relationships. I don't know where the cab driver is, but I watched him respond to the beauty of this man's change story. And it really impacted just the taxi driver for sitting there for 2 hours. And
I love that.
Yeah.
I love it.
You can make a difference in the community. So it's really exciting.
Yeah. And that's how God works.
Yeah.
Well, it's exciting. Yeah. Well, you also work alongside your husband, Scott, to host law students from Pepperdine and Seeking Justice in Uganda. And I know you do other things besides that, but would you share a bit about this work and the difference it's making in so many lives? And even maybe a couple, like one of the stories I read recently about a young woman who was trafficked and was released, and so many people are unfairly put in these crowded jails, their lack of justice. So tell us about all of this.
Well, and I think the big push a number of years ago, Pepperdine, which preceded us, and there was early work that was probably done 20 years ago, 15, 20 years ago by a gentleman by the name of Bob Goff.
I know Bob.
Developed some relationships with some high-ranking officials within the judiciary. And Bob's now gone on and doing other things in schools and things like that all over the world. But the seeds that he planted and the relationships with his friends at Pepperdine helped develop a partnership where the idea of plea bargaining, which is basically resolving cases short of trial. And in the United States, 95% of cases, if you get arrested for something, your case is resolved without going to trial. And here in most of the developing world, the only way cases are resolved is if you sit in prison and wait for trial. And it could be years and years and years for stealing five tomatoes because there's no defense attorneys and there's a little bail. And it was people here don't have addresses. And so in the U.S., if you fished without a license or you sold a chicken on the side of the road, didn't have a license, you'd get a ticket or a fine. Mm-hmm. But because there are addresses here, they don't fine you or ticket you. They just put you in prison. So Uganda has, from what I've read, the sixth most crowded prisons in the world. And much of the rest of the developing world has very overcrowded prisons. It's very common. A prison that is built for 600 might have 2,000 prisoners.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. It's very, very challenging. So the judiciary in Uganda recognized that when Pepperdine suggested this potential partnership, and they codified or made into law the opportunity for plea bargaining. And so Pepperdine's been here for about 6 or 7 years, helping to implement that, to train judges and prosecutors and what they call magistrates, which are like lower level judges, on how to do plea bargaining so we can kind of fast track. And I call it kind of legal triage. Like you would in a hospital in a war zone, and you just get in and you get a number of attorneys in and you power through a number of cases. And so there's actually, Pepperdine has Ugandan legal staff, attorneys and advocates that are doing plea bargaining year round. But twice a year, we host a group from the United States. So it would be Pepperdine's law school spring break, which they did weeks ago. And we bring over about 20 to 25 law students and lawyers, which is how Scott got involved. He came over as a volunteer lawyer. Our went to Pepperdine, and that's how we were introduced to the program. And so he started coming as a volunteer about 6 or 7 years ago. He'd come twice a year and help train both Ugandan law students as well as American law students. And we would go, he would go into the prison. And so we do that. We go in, we set up like legal clinics in the prison yard. It's dusty, it's hot. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of prisoners either sitting in the sun or in the dirt. Maybe under a tree, and we get files from the prosecutor, and then our legal teams fast track. We can usually do between 300 and 450 cases where we resolve in about 4 days, about 100 cases a day. It's total chaos. It's complete. I'm sitting there going, I'm a suburban white, mom from Issaquah, and I'm sitting here surrounded by men in yellow shorts and bare yellow shirts. And, it's very safe. There's lots of guards, and I don't feel unsafe at all. But you just are like, it is pretty remarkable to be in this situation. But the joy of it is resolving these cases. You know, many of these people are guilty and they've done terrible things, but they've hopefully paid, served a long enough time, or some of them have overserved their sentences. And then we always end up about 25 to 30% of the cases we work on, people leave the next day because wow. they've either overserved their sentence or their case is dismissed for lack of evidence. Wow. And so really our team, both the Ugandan advocates, the Ugandan law students and the US law students and attorneys, this is the first time that any of these people have ever seen an attorney.
Oh my
Someone who's listened to their story. And I just think it's kind of, I call it the ministry of presence, of being available to listen, to hear people's stories. And these are not all good guys, they still, as one of our law students said last year, you can't, you know, God doesn't define us by the worst thing that we've ever done. He does not, he has seen that we are his creation. And so that law student actually came back again this
wow.
And so I'm hoping he actually might be in Seattle at a law firm. We're kind of hoping that that's the case, but wonderful. It's really been lovely to work with the law students and have them see the world differently, to kind of be for what they have, to know that they have things that they can give away, to introduce this idea of volunteering, of pouring their lives to other people. And so that's been encouraging.
That's just amazing. So I recently read in your blog about you went in during this time that you're just talking about, and there was a group of women.
Yes.
And there weren't, you didn't have any files on those women. And so tell us, and the one young woman who was trafficked, tell us that story.
So was hot. And these rows of women, probably 25 women, they're in yellow cotton dresses. And they were sitting straight in the sun, probably about 10 feet away from the table where I was working. And one of our attorneys, actually from Seattle, his name is Mike McKinstry. He's retired from the law. Yeah. And so he was here, and I think he just recognized that, why aren't we calling any of these women? And they're all really young, really young. Went to the guard, the female guard, and gathered their names. The guard took all their names, was very helpful. And we went through all of our files, and we were like, we don't really think we have any of these files, and we can't help them if we don't have their police file. And then we found one file for a girl named Rose, and it said in her file that she was 20. So I went to her and I said, she did speak English. Not everybody speaks English, but she spoke English. And I said, you know, the next, you will get help. The next advocate or attorney that's available, you will get help. And she doesn't really know, you know, what that means. And so the next person that came up was a third year law student named Lauren. And so she took Rose, and they went over and sat with Mike. It was actually Mike McKinstry's team, heard her story. And of all of the attorneys and the law students that we had, which between the Ugandans and the Americans was probably about 40. Lauren, only one, we find out later, that had been specially trained in kind of recognizing trafficking. And God knew what he was doing. Rose wasn't 20. She was actually 18. She'd left home at 16 for the idea of a job. She was from about 6 hours outside the capital city. And she was promised a kind of a housekeeping job. And so she came to the Capitol at 16 years old and had been away for a year and a half and had never been paid. And this story is very common. So she'd been charged 2 counts of theft. She'd stolen a set of clothes and enough money to take a bus home. And the man who was the head of the house had her arrested. She'd been in prison for 4 months. I turned 18 there, and the picture of her, she looks like she's about 14 years old. So Lauren, her advocate or attorney, kind of quickly got beyond the theft story and realized there's a why behind why she did this. And then she heard more of the story. This is completely the definition of trafficking. And if you're trafficked and you do steal something, there's no reason to charge you because the circumstances are extenuating. So Lauren went to the prosecutor, and they took it straight to the judge. And both the judge and the prosecutor said, yeah, this is going to be dismissed. And so it was just such a joy. And Rose had been praying. I'm sure her mama had been praying too. She was sent home the next morning.
See, I love that story.
Well, and the lovely thing about this, normally when people are sent home, we certainly celebrate that, but they kind of leave with nothing, or, you know, whatever they had. And if they have enough money, you know, equivalent to a dollar or two, they might be able to get home. But she had to travel for 6 hours, which she didn't have a phone. She didn't have any means. And we had actually two guests that we don't always have guests at these events. But these two guests from South Carolina said, no, we're going to make sure they get her home. Mm. So they arranged for a taxi, a private taxi, which is very unheard of, to drive her 6 hours home. And the sweet taxi driver, who we've known for 3 years since we've been here, had no idea what we do here. He was the one that drove. And he had the mindfulness to take a video.
Wow.
And the reunions, it's just absolutely beautiful.
A video of her reuniting with her family when he dropped her off?
And then we later video was mom had hugged and was just overwhelmed. And mama's in the yard at her and doesn't realize someone's taking a picture of her. But this taxi driver is taking video and she's has her hands extended and is praising God. And the daughter's on the side watching her mom.
Wow.
Really so thankful to the God of the universe for her return. So it was, there's a lot of stories like that, but that one was particularly powerful. And the joy too is that we have ended up finding another file. And sweet Lauren, our young third year attorney, worked with her, and she was also a trafficking victim. Oh. And she went the next day to children. I think she had two or three kids.
Oh my gosh. So, wow.
Yeah. So it's really amazing to see American law students recognize the value of their law degree. And they may not be doing work in the developing world, but they can come back and visit and a couple times a year serve. And that's what a number of these folks who are attorneys come repeat times, and they pay their own and they give their service away and train young attorneys.
So beautiful. I love that. Okay. I have a question though. Did the prosecutor then, do they go after the guy that was trafficking her?
No.
I would,
in case that would happen, but no, they don't. And I think sexual crimes, especially in Uganda during COVID, were rampant. And they're just horrific. People couldn't travel, that we couldn't. It was not a great time. And sexual crimes, and they call it defilement, aggravated defilement if it's with a child, were quite serious here. And a lot of those people are not probably going to be part of plea bargaining, the criminals. A lot of them were arrested because they raped little girls. And those stories are beyond sad.
So. Yeah. So it's a capacity thing. They're going after the ones they can, but they can't do it all. Right. And that's true for you guys too. How do you feel overwhelmed sometimes? Like you look at the massive amounts of people, that's gotta be hard. How do you deal with that? The people that you can't get to and you can't get to their files.
And I think the hard thing is, I think the encouragement, like Mother Teresa, in one of her books, someone said, how did you change, you know, the thousands of people? And she said, you start by picking up the one in front of you. And
both
my husband and I, we call ourselves practitioners more than kind of policy people. And we're probably not going to change laws, but we're just going to pick up the person in front of us. And that's been that way. And we have to trust that God knows. Like of those 25 women, for some reason on that day, God recognized Rose. Does he not care about those others? He absolutely does. Mm-hmm. But in that moment, that day, we just have to be grateful that he recognized Rose. Mm-hmm. And then Jacqueline, the woman the next day. And and I don't understand it all.
Yeah.
And it is heartbreaking because you're leaving so many people. Yeah. Have to be a practitioner and say, I'm called to minister to the person in front of me.
Hmm. Oh, that's really a great way to say that. I love that. So this is such an interesting season for you, Sally, and you've been away from your kids a lot and home of Issaquah. What has God been teaching you in this season?
Oh, so much. you know, being having open hands. I'm a youth. I was very involved in Young Life when I was in the U.S. And you come here, and things are initially especially quieter. You don't know people. Travel around town. Traffic is very difficult where we live. Driving is very stressful. So it's not like you. Like my favorite thing in Issaquah would be, oh, I'll go get a Starbucks shopping at Marshall. It's just not Starbucks and Marshall's. So there to how to relax in different ways. But the beauty of that has been meeting amazing, amazing people, particularly the Ugandans that work with my husband. We've had just a delight of getting to know them. And again, they're folks we would never have known had we not lived here. And the diplomatic and the expatriate community here is extensive. And that has been a real honor to meet people, mostly career missionaries and diplomats who have lived and served all over the world. Wow. And I am in awe of them. Mm-hmm. And some have a faith, some don't. But those who are motivated by their faith are pretty remarkable people. They've lived in very difficult places and have served and served. And I've been in awe of them, and I've been learned from them. So that has been really encouraging. Some of the big things that I've realized, like in the US right now, we get comments all the time, like, are you safe? Are you safe? Are you safe? Because that's a very American kind of thought right now with our kids and everything. And my husband calls it the LICED 4-letter word, because we don't use that word. And you live and work among people where safety, personal safety, is not what is dictating what we're doing. You do something, you're going to take risks and you're live a life that is in obedience. And that doesn't mean you're always going to be safe. So I've been amazed by women who aren't motivated by safety. It's been really remarkable.
Wow. That's beautiful. Very good. Mm-hmm. Well, I know you love young people. You've worked with them and with Young Life for, I don't know how many years, lots. If you could reach the ears of younger generations right now, what piece of wisdom or challenge or something would you want to share with them?
Oh,
many, another big question.
I think the idea of generosity, because I think generosity comes out of generosity and gratitude. If we lived generous lives and lack gratitude, I think that we tend to, when we get frustrated or angry or whatever, it's because we're not giving away and we're not being grateful for what we have. And even when things go poorly, there's so much to be grateful for. And so I think that we would complain a lot less if we had gratitude, and we would recognize the world's needs and God's provision for us if we were generous and giving our lives away. And so I think those are probably the two things that have kind of blessed us beyond measure. We look back to, because my husband had, I had been a stay-at-home mom, golfer. When our youngest was, or when our oldest was one, I worked until she was one. And so we made a lot of financial sacrifices. My husband was a police officer in Seattle. He was in private practice for a bit, and then he worked at the prosecutor's office, took a big, massive pay cut to do that. But we look at all these building blocks of over the years, and God's generosity is absolutely poured out to us. And if we had not been willing to make some of these financial sacrifices, we wouldn't be in the position we are now in terms of just my husband's training and his background and our willingness to kind of say, we don't need a lot. And I remember when he started his own practice, when we came back from Kenya in 2009, the economy was terrible and he couldn't go back to the prosecutor's office because they weren't hiring at his level. And so he had to start from scratch, and God completely, you know, took care of us. And part of that, we didn't have these huge financial needs because we'd been living simply. And we've been, and part of that too is my mom's example. I have to tell this quick story of my mom, but.
Oh, please. Yeah.
Yeah. She was the instrument for me in terms of, my introduction to my faith. But a few years ago, we were cleaning out, they moved into a retirement community. My mom was cleaning out. She found a box of goodies from her early young life days. And in it was a letter hand typed, signed by the founder of Young Life, Jim Rayburn. And it thanked her for her generous donation to the Young Life Malibu Club campaign.
Oh.
And she had made a donation when she was first year in college. It was $3.
Oh.
And $3. The letter's beautiful. And it really outlines his prayer for my mom and her family. She had no kids, was not married at the time. And how Jesus could be an instrument in her future. And everything that he wrote in that letter has come to pass. And I just think of that initial generous $3 donation. And look at the impact that has had, certainly on my mom and my dad, but my brother has been super involved in Young Life. My husband and I as well. And we have kids within the grandkid mix that have been involved with Young Life and ministry. And so I'm just always grateful that small $3 donation, that Mother Teresa serving the person in front of you, that God just uses those small things to make big things and beautiful things. And we've had the privilege of, through our small little contributions, see God in such a big way.
Mm-hmm. That's such a beautiful story. And you have to think back in the 1950s, as a young college student, $3 was significant. But you know, I need to mention that too, because that's not even a latte today, but back then that was actually a bit of money.
Exactly.
Oh man. Well, gosh. Wow. Yeah. Justice and generosity and gratefulness. These are great messages for us to take away. And I can't help but comment that those pieces of wisdom that you just shared are also things that research has now found that make us healthier.
Yes.
Literally healthier body, mind, and soul. And so that's an interesting thing, that when you give your life away, generosity and gratefulness every day, grateful every day, there's something to be grateful for. And justice.
It causes you to look around and, just be thankful for the small things. And
amen.
We have in the privilege of having students come work with us, and some come for the whole summer. And so we get them over 9 weeks. And and some of them are knucklehead college students, and some of them are the most planet. And no matter what, it's been lovely to see how those maybe I wouldn't have chosen at the beginning, at the end, I'm completely committed to, and I see value and I see the way God is moving in them, even if they don't recognize it. And a hunger and a thirst in these young people. Most of the folks that come are like between 20, 23 and 30. So they're grad students. And it's really like, I'm very hopeful about our future. Young people these days, folks, they've said yes to something hard when they could go close to some fancy judge's office, and they choose to come here. And we feel like God is really honoring them and blessing us by their presence.
Yeah, and changing their lives forever. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I just can't thank you enough. What time is it there now?
It's quarter, 10 hours difference from Seattle. So it's lovely.
You cut out. It is 10:43 here in the morning, and it is
8:45 at night. Yeah.
So thank you for taking your evening to spend with me.
It's an honor to be with you.
Oh, thanks, Sally. Thank you so much. And God bless you.
You as well, Mike. Take care, my friend.
All right. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Take Root podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate, and share. To learn more about Centered and hear more stories of discovery and growth in Jesus, visit us at centered.org.